we're working on House Bill 5023, the Department of, or the Bureau of Labor and Industry, and we're prepared for the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have at your place a memo and the spreadsheet on the Bureau of Labor and Industry's budget. I'm going to go through my recommendations from the memo. I'm recommending some technical adjustments relating to reductions in rates for the PERS employer contribution, the Department of Administrative Services, Human Resource Assessment, the Attorney General, Long Distance, and Secretary of State audit. And those result in a reduction of $47,360 in the general fund, $22,166 in other funds, and $2,497 in federal funds. And then I detailed which programs those come out of in items A through D in the memo.
Are there any questions with regard to the change, the technical changes, which total $47,360?
General fund.
General fund and $22,166 other funds, $2,497 federal funds. I didn't take a grand total on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator, you is recognized.
I understand the reduction for PERS employer contribution, but what are the technical adjustments for general fund, other funds?
They're detailed below. The general funds are...
Oh, you mean right here?
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, these are technical adjustments in rates that have occurred as of savings or efficiencies in other agency budgets, and they are creating reductions in all agency budgets. And so what we've done is we've calculated the rate reduction for the PERS employer at 1.53%. Department of Administrative Services Human Resource Assessment was provided to us, and those are detailed at the bottom paragraph on the second page showing in dollar amounts. At the very bottom, I show a reduction of 17,082 general funds, 4,269 other funds, 1,862 federal funds just for PERS employer contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And the second bullet is $1,328 general funds, $323 other funds, $145 for the human resource assessment, and so on.
Oh, yes, I see. Thank you.
A little over $72,000 in those changes.
Mm-hmm.
If there's, and that really constitutes the change in the current service level relating to the technical adjustments. Senator Yee is recognized.
I have another question, Mr. Chairman. So the Attorney General rate reduction is from what to what?
It's an 8.5% reduction from the governor's recommended budget.
Which was how much per hour rate it was?
I don't know the hourly rate. I just know that it was that the budget was reduced, and we were asked to reduce them by 8.5%.
Oh.
I don't think it was necessarily an hourly rate. It was a total reduction that was taken in the Attorney General's budget, and agencies are receiving a benefit of 8.5%.
Then you follow up.
So I think Ways and Means Committee has not adopted the Attorney General's budget yet, have we?
That I'm aware of, mm-hmm. We haven't yet. Public safety has not been done yet.
No, but I suppose being passed out of committee.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it has passed out of committee. It will most likely be on Friday's full agenda.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you.
Okay. We'll continue on with the policy option packages then, if there's no objection to those changes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are four reduction packages. The first one is in the commissioner's office. These are as recommended by the governor to reclassify an executive support specialist 2 to an office specialist 2, to shift technical assistance screener and public information officer technical assistance salary to other funds and eliminate one accounting technician and reduce the Attorney General budget by $25,000. That results in a $215,582 savings in the general fund and increases the other fund by $93,933 and removes one FTE. And LFO recommends approval of that package.
Are there any questions? Now, this has already been recommended and taken into consideration the governor's recommendations. So we're just accepting the governor's recommendations here. Senator Yee is recognized. Package 090.
So are we reducing Attorney General's fees twice?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, no, we're not. The reduction in LFO's technical adjustment is net of reductions that have already been taken.
These would be in large part, 090 would be large part staff,
The budget is, yes, but the $25,000 is reduced on Attorney General. Mr. Chair, Senator, when the agency built their budget, they started with the AG's rate of 28.5% increase in fees. The Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division reviewed the budget and asked for these package reductions, and included in that was $25,000. Then the Budget and Management Division took a further reduction of 10%, which they didn't require solely to take out of their budget, and when Legislative Fiscal looked at the budget, we took the net amount between what was already reduced in 090 and what would have been reduced if we had taken the full 18.5%. That way it's only 8,000 total.
So what is the total reduction in AG's funds?
It is 50,000 plus 3,550 general funds. So 53,550 is the total general fund reduction for Attorney General.
So that's 25,000.
There are three other packages that have Attorney General reductions in them. We'll get to those.
Mr. Chairman. One is 13,093.
That's a technical adjustment.
And one is 25,000.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee. In package, the first package, 090 reduction, there is a reduction of $25,000 for the Attorney General.
Mm-hmm.
In the third package at the bottom of your page there, 090 wage and hour program,
mm-hmm.
there's a $10,000 reduction in the Attorney General for general fund. And then on your second page, there in the apprenticeship and training at the top,
mm-hmm.
there is a $15,000 reduction in Attorney General. Plus, there is then the technical adjustment of $3,550 general fund.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the $3,550 general funds and $13,093 other funds.
And follow-up question.
Senator Yee.
So they're all for the reason that the rate has decreased. I think it was proposed at 107,000 and it's been reduced to $97 an hour. Is this all because of that reason?
Mr. Chair, 38 is now. Yes.
It is.
Originally, this agency had taken a 10% reduction in all the general funds, and when they looked at it, they said that they could manage reducing their attorney. They volunteered to reduce their attorney general charges by
$50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, then, we looked at a rate reduction in the agency, and because they'd already taken a reduction there, we didn't take the full 18.5%. We took the difference of what it would have been had there been 18.5% taken out of their entire budget.
Mm-hmm. 8.5 or 18.5?
18.5. There is an initial 10% by Budget and Management Division for all agencies off of the 28%, and then the Public Safety Committee also reduced the budget by 8.5%. So it's a total of 18.5 from the 28% originally requested by Attorney General.
Okay.
Very complex.
And so package 090, the first portion is to the Commissioner's Office. And it has 090 goes into all four program areas, doesn't it?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. So that's, you want to do all of 090, or would you like to go ahead and have the Civil Rights Injured Workers Fund funding shift?
Do 090, then we'll do the injured workers.
Okay. Second portion of 090?
Is in the Civil Rights Program. It eliminates 2.5 FTE Civil Rights Investigators, one office specialist in the Portland and Eugene field office, and the related services and supplies, resulting in a general fund reduction of $319,772.
Okay. Wage and hour?
And wage and hour, it eliminates two compliance specialists and two administrative specialists, 2.5 office specialists, and the related services and supplies. It closes the Bend field office, and the remaining apprenticeship representative would be then co-located in another state agency or at a home office. The compliance staff and administrative support services within Portland, Salem, and Eugene field offices will be reduced, and then the Attorney General's budget is reduced $10,000.
And the final portion?
In the apprenticeship and training program, it eliminates one FTE apprenticeship representative, 2.5 FTE office specialist, 1 FTE administrative specialist, and the related services and supplies. Two positions are currently vacant, and the apprenticeship information officer, who serves as a single point of contact for answering questions and concerning program operating requirements and strategies for applying, will be eliminated, and the AG budget is further reduced to $15,000. That's a savings of $345,918 to the general fund. I don't mean savings, I mean a reduction to the general fund, and $7,708 federal fund.
Are there any other questions relative to package 090? Bare bones reduction. Sorry.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, these are all recommended by governor's reductions.
These are governor's reductions that are recommended.
And follow-up question.
Follow-up, yes. Sir.
And how does this affect programs? Because I noticed that the apprenticeship numbers have gone down, and if we further eliminate people in that division, is that going to further delay, further reduce number of apprenticeship?
I think we had testimony that there would be some cut as a result of the governor's recommended budget, but as to whether or not it, I don't recall if there was specific testimony that we would actually be reducing the overall effectiveness on apprenticeship and training. I think we've got some projections there, Senator Yee, that...
There's no projections.
Let's see, number of women and number of...
performance measure, which is very concisely prepared, except I don't see any predictions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, for the most part, these reductions will reduce the response time that the agency has in dealing with their programs and services. They're not going to improve their ability to move programs and services out the door. It's going to either stay the same, or it may be reduced slightly or somewhat.
I'm not going to qualify it. I'll let the agency address that.
Mr. Chairman, could we hear a response from Labor Commissioner?
Commissioner Roberts.
One, why are there no projections? And two, how would the reduction affect the recruitment of apprenticeship?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I'm the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. We have not tried to project into the future things like civil rights complaints, wage and hour complaints, or the number of apprentices, because those are things over which we really have no control. The number of apprentices is not determined by the staffing levels that we have, because the apprenticeship department or the programs are really driven by the labor management joint committees that are set up in different industries, and they will recruit and retain people based on the demand in the industry, the committees they have set up, and how they're being run. As you see in the numbers that are programmed there, we've had apprentices were going up in number through 1997. They've been declining somewhat since then. Part of that's because of what's happening in the industry. Part of it's also because we have gone through as an apprenticeship council and eliminated apprenticeship programs that were not really moving people through the program. And I'm confident that today the numbers that we have are much more solid in terms of people that are actually enrolled in programs that will make them ultimately eligible for journey status, which is the goal of the apprenticeship programs. We don't try to project out ahead where we are on that. Our cuts in this budget will not impact the ability of those programs to admit new apprentices, and it should not affect the number of apprentices. We're not going to be able to provide quite as much support in some areas or to do so quite as quickly, but I feel confident that in apprenticeship in particular, we should be able to maintain the quality of work that we have done even with these reductions, and it should not adversely affect the apprenticeship programs.
So the apprenticeship referred to you by the labor management or the industry people, but what do your staff do?
Mr. Senator Yee, they're not referred to us. What happens is the Apprenticeship Council oversees and registers the apprentices and the apprenticeship programs. This is a really a private sector partnership that the state has a responsibility for, acting really on behalf also of the federal government, because they register apprentices through our state apprenticeship committee. And what we're there for is to make sure that access is fair and open to everyone, that people are brought in and get the education as well as the on-the-job training along a range of activities, so that we make sure that these workers are really being educated and trained for the workforce. And that's the state's interest, and that's the federal government's interest, and that's what we try to do. So we're really a regulatory agency. We're also a support agency because we provide help so they can comply with the law and make sure they run them effectively. And the Apprenticeship Council appointed by the governor, which I statutorily chair, has the responsibility for doing that. But it's really driven by what's happening in the private industries. And I'm saying this primarily in the construction trades. We have a few non-construction, but by and large, this is a construction industry training and education device. But it is driven by what's happening really in the private sector. And we're there to make sure we get compliance and that the training is done appropriately and properly. And again, I think we're doing a better job with that than we did 6 or 7 years ago with more staff, because we are clearer in defining our role and requiring that the apprenticeship committees, labor management committees, that they assume the responsibility for doing the training and doing the work, and that we oversee the compliance to make sure they comply with the law. So from that standpoint, I don't believe that the reductions in this budget would adversely impact their ability to bring in new apprentices, their ability to train them, or our ability to ensure compliance.
Senator Yee?
No question. So if apprenticeship becomes higher than what your support staff can provide services for, then what would happen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, our sense is, and again, as you can look here in terms of, we had almost 2,000 more apprentices back in 1997 than we had in the year 2000. And in fact, we peaked out at one point. We had over 9,000 people enrolled, and we were able to accommodate that. And since that time, we've gotten rid of some of these programs that are not very, I'll give you one example. There was a reforestation program that had a high percentage of Hispanics and therefore looked really good on paper. But what we found was that no one was being trained for anything. And so when they their initial contract ran out and they weren't doing anything, we went back through and eliminated that. And so our goal here is not to play games with the numbers, and I know that's not what you're suggesting, but that we have tried to maintain good apprenticeship programs. We believe we have the capacity to significantly expand apprenticeship in this state without overburdening our staff, because we have redirected our efforts so that we're not really doing the bulk of the work. The work is being done by the labor management committees, and that our ability to oversee that, while our people might be extended a little broader, and they certainly would be required to be more creative in how they do their work, we don't believe. Now, if at some point we felt that we needed to have more people to ensure compliance, we would come back to the e-board or come back to the legislature next session, or whoever's labor commissioner next session would come back and say we need to do that. Right now, we feel confident we can do the job with the staff.
Well,
further questions,
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
While labor commissioner is here, I want to know, why is there no projection on your performance measures for wage and hour claims, for technical assistance, for hearing units? No projection.
Mr. and Senator Yee, because those are things over which we have no control, and that we are complaint-driven in most of those areas, or in the case of technical assistance, we're request-driven. And so we haven't tried to project how, and you can see in some of those civil rights complaints have been declining pretty steadily since 1996 in the printout you have. Wage and hour goes up and down depending on what's happening in the economy. Wage Security Fund particularly, if you have a large insolvency, like a few years ago we had Smith's Home Furnishings, that was a huge drain, so that drives the numbers up. We don't have any control over that. We don't really have control over the number of apprentices. We don't really have control over what's coming in. We try to set as our performance measures, we make predictions, how quickly we can handle those and how we can deal with them, and the goals and the guidelines that we're trying to work toward. That's why, for example, under apprenticeship, we have set some goals and objectives for the percentage of women and percentage of minorities, because that's something we're trying to encourage. We don't pretend that we have control over that, but those are things we're trying to encourage. We aren't trying to set arbitrary goals for the number of complaints we receive, or even, frankly, for the number of apprentices, because we think that should be driven by the needs of the industries and by the ability of those committees to meet those needs.
Any questions, Senator? All right. Thank you very much. Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think for the benefit of our colleagues that were with us on Friday, one other thing that I want to make sure that we make part of the record is the conversation around Package 090, the reduction in the civil rights program, and to indicate that there was testimony back and forth with the commissioner that no intent to diminish the important work of the civil rights section is contemplated by these cuts, and that the committee recognizes how important that work is. That this is more a matter of fiscal restraint than it is speaking to the program or the value of the program.
Certainly, and as indicated in the budget narrative that's presented relative to the activity, the overall complaints of civil rights are down to less than 2,000 in the year 2000, and the number of days could days to complete the various cases that are outstanding could actually be increased from 155 days up to 160 days as a result of the fact that we are in fact taking the governor's recommended decrease in the budget. Senator Corno is recognized.
Yeah, I apologize, Mr. Roberts. I wasn't here Friday. I was on my way home to go to a town hall. And I've been getting a lot of letters about the Bend office being closed and people being concerned about having to go to Eugene for services, especially this time of year. So after this meeting, if you would possibly visit with me about that. I don't want to take the committee's time. You've probably already covered that. But
I'd be glad to do it afterwards, but we didn't really cover that last time. If you're interested, I can give you just a short explanation of why we did that, and I would make it clear, this was not something we wanted to do. We were asked to meet a 10% reduction, and so as we went through that, and this was a list of things that we said would have some impact, but we think we can mitigate that, and let me explain why. And part of it's driven by just the fortuitous circumstance that we have one of, right now we basically have an apprenticeship person and a wage and hour person who's stationed there. We have some clerical help. we don't have really a full office. In an ideal world, because that's, as you know, the fastest growing part of the state, we'd love to beef up, we'd love to have a civil rights person there, we'd love to have a farm labor unit person there, even though we recognize that a lot of our work, most of our work is done over the phone and through other ways of communication. Having a presence there would be beneficial. But in a time when we're looking at cutting back and we have someone who's retiring, we'd have to relocate someone there and create a vacancy in one of our other offices, that we believe that what we can do with the apprenticeship person who's there is try to outstation him in the area and keep him there anyway. Either co-locate with another state agency, as we did in Pendleton when we closed that office but left a civil rights investigator there, or alternatively may even be able to telecommute out of his home. But we want to make sure we maintain a presence. We also would like to the extent that we can, use other existing state agency offices there to have forms and other things available. We want to make sure that we have ability through telecommuting to get the presence there. So what we're trying to do is make sure we serve the community, but with the size of the staff that we'd be left with after the retirement of one person and trying to deal with that, we didn't think that that infrastructure cost made sense for us in terms of maintaining it. But we are committed to maintaining the presence there. And this gets back to one of the things I did talk about at greater length the other day, and I'm not going to revisit, but if we were part of a broader agency that had the responsibilities for more things like OSHA and building codes, the rest of it, so we could have more of a presence throughout the state in an integrated fashion, I think that would be a better design for the agency. I personally think that kind of a change would require eliminating the elected office that I now serve in, and that's very controversial in this building. So I don't expect to see that happen this session. But as a result of that, we are forced to constrict somewhat. I'm very sensitive to the message that sends to the state. There's already a feeling, as I know you're well aware, and I'm sure Representative Butler and Representative Johnson, not so much Representative Ringo, because he's part of that I-5 corridor, as I am, and living in Eugene, there's a feeling the rest of the state that you're not being served the same way if you're not on I-5. And some would say if you're not in the Willamette Valley. Some would even say if you're not in Portland. But however you look at that, there is a problem, and every time you have to close an office like this, it does send a signal that I think is an unfortunate one. But in managing our resources and meeting the target for cuts we were given, we felt we'd have to do that. But we are very sensitive to trying to make sure we not only Bend, but that whole Central Oregon and frankly, Eastern Oregon, that we serve out of that office, that we're going to continue to do that.
Thank you, and I appreciate the Chair's indulgence and patience. And if someone maybe from your office would just drop by a letter that explains what's going on so we can answer to our constituents. But your co-location of government offices was music to my ears. I thought about putting in a bill that makes agencies in the rural area, instead of everybody having to have their own office, their own equipment, their own receptionist, their own people that serve the clients, co-locate. And that's just music to my ears. So thank you.
Other questions or discussion relative to Package 090? If there's none, we'll go ahead and accept Package 090, and then Package 301.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Package 301 is the shift of resources from other fund to general fund for the Civil Rights Injured Worker Funding Program. The legislature requested that the agency build their budget without the reliance on the worker benefit fund to pay for these civil rights investigators, and didn't necessarily specify the general fund, but the governor is recommending that the general fund be used to pay for these, and I'm recommending approval of that package.
Okay. Are there any questions relative to the shift of the resources in Package 301, Civil Rights Injured Worker Funding Shift? If there are none, we'll go ahead and approve Package 301. Ms. Jordan?
With that, Mr. Chair, I recommend that you approve the budget bill, House Bill 5023, in the amount of $17,636,911. And 113.75 FTE by approving the following amendments in the bill. In Section 1, Line 6, delete $12,443,266 and insert $12,395,906. In Section 2, on Line 7, delete $3,663,704 and insert $3,647,449. In Section 3, on Line 11, delete $395,288 and insert $389,377. and in section 4 on line 7, delete $1,206,676 and insert $1,204,179.
Now, colleagues, let me just say this relative to this budget package. The approval of the above recommendations resulted in a total agency budget of $19,854,288, but there is $2,215,000 of non-limited expenditures, which the governor's recommended budget basically has decreased out of wherever the labor commissioner deems appropriate within the office, so the parts of the total are more than the actual budget which we will be approving as recommended by legislative fiscal office by $2.215 million. Representative Johnson is recognized.
I want to make sure that I understand what you just said to us, that the $2,215,000 would be allocated throughout the agency the way that the commissioner recommends that it be?
Basically, that's my understanding.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the $2,215,000 is for wage claims out of the Wage Security Fund, and that's the only purpose that money serves. They pay claims for wages when businesses have gone out of business or declared bankruptcy, and there are salaries that haven't been paid. Those workers can file a claim and receive, there is a limit on the amount that they can receive, but they can get up to a certain amount.
So that's the claim pool.
That's the claim pool, and that's all that is. There are no other expenditures from that. It's a dedicated fund for that purpose.
Thank you. And I don't have a calculator to do the math, but the $19,854,288 minus $2,215,000 is $17,636,911.
Exactly.
Thank you. Now I got it.
Right. I apologize for leading you astray, but that's going to
we're back on the
wherever it has to be come out of. It has to come out of that claims pool of the Wage Security Fund.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Well, I have another question.
Okay, sorry. I'll hold my motion.
Thank you. Do you think we can go back to package 301? And I want to know when you not include revenue out of workers' compensation benefit fund to support civil rights investigations results in a shift from other funds. What's the other funds we are shifting from?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, the other funds is the money that is in the workers' compensation benefit fund. These are cents per hour assessments on employers' and employees' wages that goes into a fund for workers' compensation benefits. And from that fund, there had been, in this biennium, it would have been $531,419 diverted to the Civil Rights Investigations Unit. The legislature directed the agency not to use those funds or build their budget using those funds in the next biennium, which is 2103. So there is a shift to using general fund money for that purpose now.
So they cannot use general fund?
Mr. Chair, they cannot use the other funds. They must use general fund now if they're going to fund these positions to do this work. There is no other source of funds.
So if we take out those positions, we have to take out the money?
Mr. Chair, if you do not approve the use of general funds, you would be decreasing that unit by 4 FTE.
So are we continuing the FTEs?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's the recommendation.
Oh, I see.
Not an increase nor a decrease in the full-time employees within that Civil Rights Injured Worker program. It's a fund shifting to shift it to the general fund away from the workers' compensation benefit funds.
But not using general fund, we use other funds to continue the funding.
Just the opposite.
We are using general funds.
Right.
We had to go to the general fund as opposed and reduced it out of the other fund source, out of the workers' benefit fund.
Because statutorily, we cannot use that fund. We have to go to general fund.
Correct.
But we are not cutting FTEs.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Could I have a comment, Mr. Chairman, before we pass the budget?
Certainly, Senator Yee.
With the performance measures, there are no projections for civil rights, wage and hour, apprenticeship, and technical assistance, and hearing unit. Do you think we can have an estimated cases? I know you say the agency has no control, but you did indicate within how many days you can complete the hearing. So it will be helpful to just to have an estimated cases due to past trends.
Commissioner Roberts?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, we can make up some numbers and put them in there, but I would tell you the reason why, and we'll be glad to do that if you'd like to look at that and make our best guess. The reason why we don't put those in there is that we like to make projections of things that we're aspiring to achieve as goals. We don't have a goal for the number of wage and hour complaints. Frankly, I'd love to live to see long enough when they almost go away because everybody gets paid or everyone's treated fairly so there are no civil rights complaints. Our measure of our performance isn't how many come in, but when we get them in, we want to take care of them in a timely manner. That's why we set that as a goal. And the same is true with our wage claims and how long it takes us to get people paid who need to be paid. And in apprenticeship, we're trying to work on increasing women and minority percentage within that. But that the, as I said earlier, the number of apprentices you have is really dictated by the economic conditions and the rest of it. So we could, if you would feel better, we can go through and give you our best guess of where we think things are going. But I would tell you, if you ask me what I want my performance judged on, whether we accurately predict that, no, because those aren't the things that we believe determine this or measure the success of our agency. It's how we handle the complaints we get that are generated by the society at large.
But you have projected the days to finish hearing those complaints and hearing those claims. So without knowing a caseload or your workload, how do you predict how many days it will take you to finish the case?
Sure, Senator Yee, we set those guidelines because we want our people, for example, in the case of civil rights complaints, we want them to interview every complainant within 30 to 45 days. And if they're not doing that, we want to ask them why. Now, if they say, well, we're so swamped with the caseload, then we need to figure out another way to reconfigure and deal with that because, as I say, we don't have control over what comes in the door. We do have control over how our people use their time, how much time they spend on it. And we think that it is unfair to both the claimants and to the respondents to have these cases drag out. As I mentioned earlier, when we came in, we were taking 11 and a half months to resolve these cases, and now we're averaging 160 days. Our goal was really 180. We're beating that, and we're projecting that we think we can continue to, although with these cutbacks, we may not keep reducing it, we think we can meet acceptable goals. So we try to estimate those because those are our goals we work toward. And if we're failing to meet that because we're understaffed, you'll hear about it. But in the meantime, we want to try to make projections of things that we think are fair performance measures for us and not things outside our agency over which we have no control.
Is there a statutory limit for those hearings to be resolved?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, yes, for civil rights complaints, we have to make a decision within 12 months whether we're going to go forward with the complaint or dismiss it. And as I say, when we came in, we were taking 11 and a half of those 12 months in most cases, and we didn't think that gave us very much time to do a good job with the case when we got them. So we reworked how we do it. We've also had a reduction in the caseload somewhat, but it's more how we handle the cases and deal with it that's enabled us to reduce that. And that, we think, is a legitimate performance measure, and it's something that we can use as a management tool to ask ourselves, are we really overburdened, or are people simply not moving expeditiously to take care of the cases? And I think we've done a good job by using those as targets. And in the wage and hour, the same thing there, and apprenticeship, trying to encourage more women and minorities to have fair participation and the rest of it. Those are all things that we're willing to accept as goals. We don't think just that the raw numbers are something that would be a very helpful management tool for us, because we think that's determined by things outside our control.
I just like to comment that maybe you should have a footnote to say the blank spaces due to circumstance over you can control, and therefore you're not making any predictions. And perhaps it would be helpful to know what the statutory limit is for finishing, for resolving those cases, so we can see that you're really way within your limits.
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. I think this is very well done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Cornell.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House Bill 5023 with the LFO recommended amendments.
Senator Cornell now moves House Bill 5023. A total amount of $17,636,911 with 113.75 full-time equivalency. Are there any objections to passing it out? Okay, we'll so order. Now we'll move this to the full committee. The motion by Senator Cornell is to move this to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And we will, let's see, Senator Yee, would you like to carry this in the poll?
I'll be very happy to carry it.
And the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Representative Johnson, would you like to carry this in the House floor?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very kindly. We have our carriers.
Thank you.
We will go ahead and close the work session then on Bureau of Labor and Industry. Thank you very much, Commissioner Roberts and staff. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Chair, I've been
upstaged.
I see a member here who I believe is going to testify,
okay.
So I think instead of
okay.
asking me to do my overview.
I'm glad that you called for my attention. Yes. We will, let's see, Bureau of Labor and Industry, Bureau of Labor and Industry Secretary, okay. Colleagues, we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 5017. Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, and we have in the room with us today, we're honored to have Representative Jackie Winters. Representative Winters, would you like to come forward and testify on behalf of House Bill 5017?
Thank you, Chair Butler and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jackie Winters. I'm the representative of District 31. Which you're currently sitting in my district here in Salem. I'm here in support of the Oregon State Fair. Let me take you back just a little bit. Last year, we had a task force that was formally put together by the leadership of the House and the Senate, and I co-chaired with Senator Courtney, and I'm surprised that the senator isn't here, and he will probably come shortly to testify before you. Our charge was to look at the Oregon State Fair based on this body in 1997, which had the joint legislative audit, which audited the agency, and they identified some problems and some challenges that was facing the fair and the facilities. And then in 1999, the legislature allocated $10.2 million for facility restoration and repair, but they only released $2 million of that allocation for emergency repairs, and the remaining funds was contingent upon additional studies by the task force, which I co-chaired. And I want to kind of tell you what that task force came up with. And there was two pieces to it. One, there was a feasibility study that was paid for by the city, county, and the state. And that feasibility study was to identify some investment opportunities, if you will, and in a collaborative way rather than just one entity looking at the state fair. In addition, there was a modernization master plan, which was also developed at along the same time, so we chose to combine the efforts of both rather than having two pieces out there. And that plan included repairs, maintenance recommendations, and improvements to the fairgrounds. Those improvements, and I must say that at the time that we were going through the task force reviews, we also had a change in directors at that same time, and we were having a lot of problems. And I want to commend one person because where we are today is as a result of the hiring of Katie Cannon, who is the director out there now, who took what I think was some impossibilities and was able to turn some of them around. We were faced with some real tremendous debt at the state fair. We didn't know whether we were going to even put on a fair in August. And we gave her, I believe she was hired sometime in May, and we gave her a very short period of time to turn things around. And we did have, I think, probably one of the best fairs that we've seen in the last 5 years. People were enthusiastic about it. She has done a very good job. The grounds were clean. People were talking about, well, gee, it was nice to come to the fair for a change. But with that, let me say that the deterioration that had occurred at the fair over the years is something that I don't think any of us could be proud of. I made the comment during the task force that we need to recognize that as policymakers that we too had a responsibility for what was taking place at the Oregon State Fair, and that this is the one place in the state where we celebrate Oregon. And yet buildings have been allowed to deteriorate. It's something that all of us sat back and talked about. It really was a nice place to go. And one of the things that I think Senator Courtney and I both recognized is that the county fairs feed into the Oregon State Fair. So when we looked at the fair, it was more than just a 12-day event. And so with that, we had some recommendations that came out of the master plan. And one of those was that we needed to expand the Jackman Long connection with Columbia Hall so we could look at a revenue stream year-round rather than during the 12 days. We believe that there needed to be an addition of horse stalls and RV hookups so that they could get a revenue stream there. We also talked about whether or not we should be subsidizing the state fair. With few exceptions, most state fairs across the country do receive some kind of revenue from their governmental entity. And that's a recognition that the fairs are of value to its citizenry across the state, and that it's a place where people come to celebrate. You know, I want to emphasize that because I grew up in Oregon, and I grew up in Portland. And we came to the state fair. And my memories of a state fair are very fond. You know, it was a place where you were able to get to see the animals. You know, if you're growing up in the urban community, you often don't know what it's like to talk about, you know, the cows and the bulls. I know Senator, the good senator does know about that. But when you're living in the urban community, and a lot of the participants come from the Portland and the Valley, and then the kids from 4-H come from around the state. And I think it's a resource for us that we should continue to support. And I, for one, would hope that you share that enthusiasm with me. I think we need some investment in the fair. I think we need to assure that buildings don't continue to deteriorate like they were allowed to in the past. I think also that we should move the fair to where it has other revenue streams that are more than just 12 days, so that they are really being energized into leasing those facilities and renting them for conference spaces and other uses. And so it's my recommendation to you that we continue our efforts with the Oregon State Fair. I would hate to see us being one of the few states in this country that didn't celebrate who and what we are. And I think most states do. We came from an agriculture background in this state. I told someone it's kind of interesting that sometimes when we kind of go through life, we forget about it was when we were kids. And we also forget about sharing our legacy with those who are coming behind us. And I see the state fair as a part of our legacy. Last fair, I even milked the goat. I challenged Senator Courtney, and we had a goat milking contest. So,
Mr. Chair,
Senator
Clark, I had a fundraiser once, and we did grease pigs, and I won. And I think maybe that's something you ought to consider at the state fair for legislators to do.
I think you're right. But I just want to impress on you how important I think the Oregon State Fair is.
May I continue?
Please.
I agree with you, and I still remember the very first time I came, having been born and raised in Oregon, I can remember the first time I came to the State Fair. What's really troubling to me, and I realize we've had a lot of directors since 1988 when I first came into the legislature, but we had deferred maintenance, buildings falling apart, financial problems then as well. Now, the voters in Deschutes County voted to build a $30 million fairgrounds facility, which is the finest in the Northwest as far as I'm concerned, if you ask me. And we've had some financial problems, and the county has stepped forward, and business people have stepped forward. And I would just urge you, this is, I realize, a state fair and not a Salem fair, but I would just urge you in your capacity as a state representative to talk to businesses and the Chamber of Commerce, the county, to assist us in helping this as well.
Senator, we had, in fact, a part of the task force, which we're continuing to, it does include the city, the county, the chamber, and our visitors association to do the very same, the thing that you're talking about. In fact, just recently, the county is doing a feasibility study to look at the possibility of having a multi-purpose kind of pavilion there. So they're picking up that particular piece to do the study on that, not state dollars. My meeting with the city this morning with the mayor was to talk about looking at some of the changes that they'll be doing, urban renewal changes that they will be doing in that area. What can they do also to complement what we're doing at the fairgrounds? So we are needing to look at ways that we can partner.
I might continue.
Please,
I think
please
that's excellent, Jackie, or Representative Winters. I think that's excellent. And I just might add that in our Deschutes County, the county commissioners have stepped up with $500,000 to meet the obligations of the fair currently. And part of that was addressed by the business community to about $150,000. And then we're committed to a new parking lot, which is $1.3 million. So we're trying to get that done by county funds and community funds as well. So you are welcome to use that as an example as you talk to your leaders in your community.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, sir. I want to preface what I'm about to say against the backdrop of the fact that I grew up in the context of the old Deschutes County Fair, and while I never had any animals, my friends did, and I sat with my father, who was then the state representative, and watched him buy herds of animals to donate to food banks. And so I've grown up in a fair tradition, but I also want to query you about whether or not your committee focused on the need for fairs to operate in a business-like way, to have business plans, to have the kind of fiscal accountability that would cause fairs to run like a business and to not rely on the mantra of we're doing it for the kids, but to actually have in place the kind of assurances to the community that the fair is being run to the best of its ability like a business.
I think if you have not seen the master plan, then, you know, the committee did focus on, you know, that the fair must begin to operate like a business. Not only the master plan, but what the funding streams are, the economical impacts, and whether or not those recommendations within that master plan will in fact produce revenues. So yes, we are, and I think, and also that the fair management itself, whether it's capable of running the fair, we discussed all those kinds of issues, and I preface my remarks earlier because part of the deterioration of the Oregon State Fair, to be quite honest with you, I think this the legislative body that preceded us has to take some ownership in what happened. I think that the oversight was not there. This task force, it was getting to this task force who began to ask some hard questions as to where it was going, and I'm going to, like Senator Yee, and looking at measurements and why we were continually having a deficit situation out there was really what brought some of these issues to the fore.
Follow up for Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, if you'll forgive some shameless lobbying for a bill that I'm going to introduce. I know that the fairs are asking for a percentage of the lottery money to support not only the state fair but also county fairs. And I am proposing a bill that would mandate some fiscal accountabilities, including the existence of business plans for fairs, a report on how the public money was used, a demonstration that contracting laws are being followed. To try to bring some level of uniform reporting from all the fairs into existence so that that investment of public money can be seen to be fiscally responsible. And I'm hopeful that fair supporters, and there are lots of them in this building, will not take offense at trying to put some fiscal discipline into the fairs throughout the state in reporting back out the use of their public funds.
I would think that that applies not only to the fairs, but if you sit in on our committee with Senator Yee and I, we're talking about that kind of accountability for all entities who have public money.
Great. I'm behind you, ladies, then, obviously, and I apologize.
Further questions for Representative Winters? Thank you.
I want to thank you for allowing me to come to testify before you.
Thank you
very much.
And I ask for your support.
I think, may I make just a comment for the record? I think on the accountability issue, lots of times in my recollection of when I've been here before is that a lot of times the fair was in trouble when we were out of session, and we've done e-board allocations, in which time you don't spend a lot of time making sure that there is accountability, fiscal responsibility issues, and not that that shouldn't be done, but it's not as easy as it's to do in the session when we're here as well.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
In response to the good senator from Bend, the bill that I'm proposing would drop in a mandated form that is developed by the Fair Commission that is uniform across the fair, so you don't have a hodgepodge of reporting formats. And it would cause a fair that fails to report to lose its assistance. Originally, I had wanted the bill to be that if one fair failed to report, they would all lose their assistance. That seemed a little draconian. And as the bill is coming out with Mr. Raccali's help, it's going to be a failure to report results in a loss of funding. Because it was my experience in listening to, I went down and spent some time with the boards of the fairs. The reporting is a mixed format. It's hard to read. To get some standardization in the reporting, you would have the kind of clearly trackable performance measures that Senator Yee has spent so much time ensuring are in place for agencies, and cover a broad spectrum of areas, including the relationship that the fair has with the county commissioners, which in my observation has sometimes been somewhat contentious. But if county commissioners were assured that their fair was operating in a fiscally prudent way that did not cause the county to be vulnerable in terms of contracting practices or environmental practices, that might help to cause the relationship to be more harmonious and to have communities doing the fair with a sense of community ownership that isn't always present in all fairs.
And if I might just comment on that, I really hope that, and I'm sure you will, being from the east side of the mountains, that you will keep your form as simple as possible. I always think of when my husband was judging fairs, when we did that type of thing, and we went and visited county fairs, and a certain criteria that if the fair was some, one set of things, they had a silver star and another one was gold star. I guess I just think of Wheeler County, the little county we went to, which is always on the verge of going broke, but some volunteer has to fill out a form, and to make it as simple as possible so that the people in those kinds of areas are not spending, number one, a large amount of time or having to document information that's extremely difficult for them. So.
Mr. Chair, may I answer the Senator?
Certainly, please.
Thank you, sir.
Final exchange.
Thanks, sir. We have left the development of the form up to the Commission so that it's being done for fair people by fair people. And hopefully because it's standardized and because I get the reports back from the fair that much of fairs that much of this material is being collected anyway, that it will neither be burdensome in its format nor burdensome in its requirements, because I'm assured that many of the fairs do it already.
Thank you very much, Senator Carno and Representative Johnson, for that shameless lobbying on behalf of your bill.
I couldn't help
it.
What's the bill number?
I don't know, but I'll get it to you as soon as I am.
I understand that there's been a meeting of the executive work group today, and so as a result of that, some of the folks are here with us, and what I'd like to do is have Robin Lamont from the Legislative Fiscal Office take just a moment, and then those who are here on behalf of the work group that would like to testify, let's just go ahead and take that time to do that. Robin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not going to go through my usual walkthrough with you of all of this budget material, but I have provided you with a packet of information that starts at the very back with a program evaluation of the State Fair that was done by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in the 97, it's a bound book, and it looks like this. It's at the very back. In addition, there are the minutes from the emergency board appearances by the commission, and there are the budget notes that directed the activities of the task force during the interim. So perhaps you could take some time at your leisure to walk through that material. I believe it'll give a pretty good background about the issues that are confronting the State Fair. And as I told Representative Butler, the State Fair Commission met today, so I'm assuming that he would like to have their testimony if they are interested in doing so.
We've got members of the State Fair Commission.
Chair Butler and members of the committee, I'm very pleased to be here today to present testimony. For the record, I'm chairman of the State Fair Commission, and I'm pleased to have with us today two others of our five-member commission. We have back behind me Ellie Dumdye. I'm sorry. Excuse me. She come around the other blindsided me. We have Larry Amold with me. And as I said before, I am chair of the commission, and I'm here today to ask for your recommendation of the agency's budget. We're very fortunate that we have a very dedicated and knowledgeable five-member commission appointed by the governor. We like to think that maybe we're as strong a commission as we've had the pleasure of having in the last few years. And most of us on the commission today have served 3 years. We have one of our members who's finishing his eighth year. And we were selected for this commission for our diverse professional backgrounds to create a visionary synergy. We represent the urban population, the rural and agricultural communities, regional government, and county fair interests, agribusiness community, and the fairground neighbors. We truly are, I believe, a microcosm of the agency's key stakeholders and allies. The Oregon State Fair Commission's vision for the agency is defined by the agency's two distinctive products. Number one, the annual Oregon State Fair and the Exposition Center. Let's talk about the State Fair first. The Commission vision for the Oregon State Fair is to provide a quality showcase and marketing opportunity for all of Oregon's key industries. Celebrate families and extended families by providing a fun, wholesome environment for people of all ages. Create a place for learning, where young and old alike can realize the breadth and diversity of Oregon and where they can experience the history and meaning of what it is to be an Oregonian. To create educational programs that provide an exciting and interactive experience, building memories that will last a lifetime. The Oregon State Fair can continue to be a unique treasure to be shared by all. It must remain our finest and only all-state, all-participatory, all-culture, all-industry, all-encompassing showcase for Oregon. Oregon State Fair must continue to remember its agricultural roots, but should also provide exciting exhibits on all of Oregon's key industries. It should continue to honor the state's history, but it should represent the contemporary Oregon life as well. It should provide a place for craftsmen and farmers to continue the proud tradition of showing and marketing their products and livestock, and offer a platform for kids to develop their unique talents. And the State Fair should have all of this activity in an environment that is designed for families and friends, with activities and programs for all ages. Oregon State Fair and Exposition Commission can achieve its goals by keeping the State Fair a progressive, relevant, and positive event that has a life of its own. We believe that the unique and varied productions and events at the Exposition Center contribute to Oregon's quality of life. The numerous events bring entertainment, education, and enjoyable experiences for the diversity of the state's population. AgFest, a nonprofit organization, educates youth and adults on agricultural activities. The Great Northwest Model Train Show and Swap Meet brings enthusiasts and collectors from all over the region. Recreational vehicle rallies and events such as the Western Regional Rotary Convention bring participants from across the nation, stimulating the local and regional economy. Horse shows and livestock auctions provide opportunities for our state's livestock breeders to exhibit and to market their animals, but they also provide educational experiences to youth and adults throughout Oregon who might otherwise have no opportunity to witness this very important segment of Oregon's economy. From Hispanic dances to professional seminars, the exposition facilities on the fairgrounds is a hub for community research, or for community outreach, economic stimulation and tourism development that enhances the livability of the region and the state. The agency has the potential and the skills to establish a strong position in the regional exposition industry. The fairground is a large enough venue to attract state and national events. Additionally, the agency staff has the experience and dedication to make it happen. Many of its employees have invested their governmental service careers at Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. But even though the booming special event market generates inquiries for facility space, the conditions of the facilities at the present time limits the staff's ability to secure these quality bookings. Funding to implement the task force's master plan would do much to remedy that. With your support of the agency's budget, Oregon State Fair Exposition Commission would continue to strive for excellence in providing a facility and programming that will celebrate the rich diversity of Oregon citizens. The vision of the Oregon State Fair Commission members believes the organization deserves every opportunity possible in fulfilling its important statutory mission. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Press. Other questions for Mr. Murray Press, the chair of the Oregon State Fair Commission?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Ringo's second.
Thank you. I have some questions about the fair in general, and I don't know if I should direct them to you. I noticed Senator Courtney stepped in. I guess I defer to you, Mr. Chair.
In deference, perhaps could we invite Senator Courtney up so that we don't keep him any longer out of committee than he should be, and then we can return to you.
Chair Butler, that would be excellent.
Perhaps.
Thank you.
Can we do that? Thank you very much for allowing us to do that. Senator Courtney, please. Thank you, Senator Courtney. You honored us by coming today.
What was excuse me,
you've honored us by coming and attending here today.
I'm honoring you by even being here?
Yes, sir. By even being here, sir.
Well, then, Representative members, I'm Peter Courtney, State Senator from District 17, and Salem Kaiser is my area district and the state fairgrounds, and they're in my district. I had hoped to be here with Senator Representative Jackie Winters, and so I will not keep you because I feel very badly about the people who just had to leave. I was on the task force with Representative Winters. I was asked to be on and asked to co-chair it by the president of all state senate, Gene Durf, in a Safeway dedication over here one night. He recommended I do that. So I want you all to understand that we did this without regard to the Democrat or Republican type of situations. In addition, we outreached to all parts with this task force. And we've already approved a bill that adds to the commission that oversees the state fair, two members to represent all the county fairs, because we felt very strongly, those of us in Salem, that we were not out, reaching out to the rest of the state. Good representative from Ontario, which I believe is even in a different time zone than the time zone I'm presently in. That's the kind of respect and sensitivity I have for you, Chair. You're in a different time zone. But I know where you are. I know where you come from. So we worked our tails off. And we had Janet Atkins, and we had, of course, the great Robin sitting next to you, working with us day and night to show us the light and the way. And I believe all the reports that we prepared, some of which involved money, I'm not going to play games about that. They did involve money. I wouldn't be here. If you will look at the background and work done by an interim task force, it's as good as it gets. Not because I had anything to do with it. Far be it. In fact, I was an anchor, an albatross around the neck of that. But it's as good as it gets. In addition, you should know that Katie Cannon stepped forward and was placed in an untenable, an unconscious position of trying to take over the state fair 24 hours before it opened last year and did a remarkable job with that event. And as I speak to you, the good representative, Jackie Taylor, and myself are out begging money. We are. From some of the biggest corporate people in all of the state and outside the state, but I want to keep it in the state as much as possible because we get in trouble when you go outside the state, to try to not only take care of private, the public money we're asking for, but even the private money. And with all due respect, I have to say this to the good representative. You listen to me, Representative Butler, because you're working your papers here.
Absolutely.
Because I'm speaking to you because I'm very fond of you, and you know that.
And I'm very fond of you.
Well, you don't have to, I don't want to do male bonding with you, but I do want to say that. But I want to speak to the good senator from all of Deschutes County. You're going to help us, you are, with your county fair, help us over here in Salem, because it could very well be someone from your county fair will be in the governing board. See, that is it. We're going to go to the locals to run our fair better, and we're going to go to the locals to reach out to our fair. And I have been on the fairgrounds. I'm not quite sure I'm going to do this right, but if I'm wrong, I'm close. I have been on the fairgrounds of one county in the middle of the night for 9 years in incredible pain, sometimes at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. I am extremely emotionally involved with those county fairgrounds because they allowed me to continue the hood to coast and to meet with my team, Columbia Fairgrounds, which they allow to be used as a major point in the hood to coast. They allow those. Are you listening to this, Representative? This is real stuff. You didn't know this. That is a famous international relay, the greatest in the world, hood to coast. Without the Columbia Fairgrounds, it doesn't get there. I have been there in great pain. Oh, man, such great pain. And I'm going to be in great pain there again in August if the body holds up, and there's chances it won't. So this is very important. We worked very hard. We did. We worked very hard as a task force, worked our tails off. Came up with these recommendations, made some personnel changes to try to make it not just Salem, but all of Oregon. Because that's what I heard last session. I was getting beat up like crazy over that last session. And we're working very hard with the private sector. We're working every way we can. I hope you believe that because it's up to you. If you don't like us, we're in deep trouble. This fair's in deep trouble. And I want you to like us and believe what we've done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I just have one question. The interim task force, the Oregon State Fair, I'm gonna straight out tell you, Senator Courtney, that I was disappointed not in your co-chairing with Representative Winters, but I was disappointed in the outreach of the interim task force, the members of the task force, with the exception of the good senator from Milwaukee and the member of the House, Representative Hansen. I think everyone that was on the on this particular task force was from the Marion County area.
Representative Butler and members of the committee, what the chair has just done is to put on the record something that is painful for me to admit. It's absolutely correct. It dawned on me one day in hearing room A, I believe that's where we met, like, I wish Representative Butler was on this task force. I mean, I really did, because you are absolutely right. Not only you, Representative Butler, but then to become Senator Clarno was on it, because you see, there's a difference, as you know, between Eastern and Central Oregon. And I think that that is very well said. It's my understanding we are going to continue this task force in some capacity in law. We are, if I'm not mistaken, there's some that we're going to continue it. And I think at a minimum, we need to make sure, should you choose to do so, this committee needs to make that recommendation, that we do put on the task force, the continuing task force, individuals that do represent more than just the Marion County and the Portland area, because that's where they did come from. That is well said. So you're right, Representative. I can't, what am I going to say to you? I surrender. You're right.
Well, I was one of those who heard the in our general government subcommittee last year. The Transportation Economic Development, where we heard the fair presentation, and the concern was that we reach outside and strive to get some input. And that's why I was concerned when I saw the makeup of the interim task force. But recognizing also that you've got the good of the whole state involved there with a lot of folks that represent a lot of other interests outside of the Salem-Marion County area, we appreciate the fact that you did do the good work that you did and make the recommendations which have been made. So, that having been said, Senator Clarno is recognized.
Yes, Senator Courtney, I'm sorry, I first knew you as Representative Courtney. Senator Courtney, I always, always appreciate you testifying before our committees, and I would suggest, since you mentioned on the Senate floor during your wonderful speech this morning that you are term limited out, that you might go about and hold yourself as a person who teaches people how to testify in front of committees, because you really do get everyone's attention, and that's good for the cause that you're working for. I am sorry, too, that you weren't able to be here when Representative Winters was here, because I suggested that maybe reaching out to some of the folks in Deschutes County, as you mentioned, would be a good idea, because our county fair, which the voters passed to tax themselves to build our $30 million facility over there, got in a little trouble recently, and we're having to cough up $500,000, and the committee's already heard this, as well as the audience, and the parking facilities that we're doing over there for $1.3 million. The business leaders in the community coughed up a lot of money, and the county commissioners did as well. So I hope that that set an example to have this area. Even though it's a state fair, there's a lot of economical benefit to the immediate area in Salem. So I hope that that is something you can take back with the task force as well, because we all want to keep our state fair. But thank you for all your hard work, too.
Certainly. Senator Yee is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtley, before you came in, we were talking about the need for efficiency in running county fairs and the need of local participation to contribute to the success of county fairs, because there are county fairs around the state that is having problems in presenting the fair. So my question is there an efficient business plan included in the state fair's proposal, and is there any local participation to contribute for the funding of the fair? You know, we have seen year after year Salem State Fair coming in asking for funding for operation, for maintenance, for construction. So we want to know, is there any constructive proposal toward efficiency and in local contribution?
There is a part of the reports that talk about what the county is contributing in the city, and it varies who you are and what you are as to your interpretation of those materials. The head of the Chamber of Commerce in the Salem-Keizer area was on the task force. They are going to redo, I just learned today, they're going to be major work being done on Portland Road and even on Silverton Road in terms of the Lancaster-Silverton Road exit, which involves county and city and state participation, because the transportation network that surrounds the state fair, I believe, is critical to its success, but not only in terms of the state fair event, but the events that it should be hosting throughout the year. We cannot get it in an urban growth, an urban renewal area. We had discussed this morning, I don't know if Representative Winters was to discuss this with you or not. I wish I could have been here with you. We met this morning at 7 o'clock with Commissioner Mike Ryan, Multnomah and Marin County Commissioner, as well as the Mayor Mike Swaim of Salem, to go over what contributions they have made and continue to make. We talked about transportation, which I believe is answering, I'm trying to answer your question as best I can, because we take very seriously the need for my community to make some kind of contribution, both at the city and the county level, as well as in the private sector level, the hotel, motel tax, and what kind of monies will go. I don't think it's as much as there should be. I'm concerned about that. I can only push so hard, but I know that we need to do more in that area, and I'm glad you asked me that tough question. I'm glad you made me answer as I'm answering, because I should be held accountable if I believe this fair should stay here and I want this area to be successful. So I don't know if that answered your question, Representative Butler, Senator Yee, but I did make a statement for the record.
Well, we will ask this question when the fair director comes up also.
Are there other questions for Senator Courtney? Representative Ringel is recognized.
Thanks very much. I apologize that I haven't read the strategic study and a lot of the materials here, but I have heard a lot of various items put forth as to the purpose of the fair. Senator Clarno mentioned it was a great thing to recognize the heritage of the state, our agricultural roots. Number one on this sheet that was just provided says it provides a quality showcase and marketing opportunity for all of Oregon's key industries. To me, that's something completely different than the heritage issue. A third thing is family entertainment. And I'm just wondering, certainly they all come together, but is one of those the most important reason to have a fair?
Chair Butler, Representative Ringo, by the way, we have something in common, you know. We're both carriers. I'll let that sit there and I'll explain to you what I mean by that. I wrote an article once called, I wrote it for the Capital Press. Are you familiar with the Capital Press newspaper, what it is? Called Kids, Animals, and Sports. And it was about 900 words long as to me the thing that could save the fair. To me, since you've asked me to prioritize, you have asked me, Councilman Ingle, to specifically come up with a single thing. That's what you've asked me. I'm going to take
the one most important.
All right, and I'm going to do that. And I'm not sure you mentioned it. When I carried the bill on the Senate floor last week saying that we should add two people representing the county fairs, I said something I feel very strongly about, that in all these county fairs, there are competition with children and their animals. Children and their animals. They go on there to the state fair. As I speak to you, the OSAA has begged me to do something with the armory or come up with a like facility so that at least the 3A competitions and at least girls, if not boys, basketball and volleyball state championships can be held at the state fairgrounds. Because every other level of high school competition, the 1A is always held where, Representative Butler?
Because the Ontario or Vail.
No, Representative, I didn't mean to embarrass you. See, now, you should have sent me a negative message. I hate to embarrass you because it's being done this week, Representative Butler, and watch me on this. The 1A basketball championships for boys and girls is being held starting Wednesday in Baker City. Baker City. They're always held there. The Shrine Game, football, for 1, 2, and maybe 3 years, is held in Baker City. The 2A is held in Pendleton. The 4A is held in Portland. Only the 3A level of competition has no home. They move them all over the place. I really mean that. So it's kids and animals and things. If nothing else, that is why the state fair, what it is, means an awful lot to the state, because the kids come in from all over. Do you know there's a residence hall, Representative Ringo, on those fairgrounds? It's in decay, well over 100 beds. It was built years ago. Did you know that? I didn't know it either. It's my district. I went out there. That residence hall was built for these kids to come and literally live on the state fairgrounds as they compete and mingle and get to know each other from the smallest corners of the state to the largest. There is a residence hall out there in district spare. So I think that is the single. If you gave me one, I'm not sure you included in there. I think that is the reason, if none other. Now, we got to have the others, Council. The reason to say this is our state fair, it belongs to all of us, and it reaches out the entire state, the children and the animals of the state. The Terrier reference is he has a degree from Boston University, and I have a degree from Boston University. They are the mighty Terriers. Terriers are about that big, and, you know, it's hard to go around and say, go Terriers. I mean, you know, go Terriers. But it's a cutie, Boston University. We both have degrees from Boston University. That's what I meant, Representative.
Right on that one.
Thank you. And I knew that before you did. And if you want to be a good politician, you'll learn those things ahead of time. Thank you, Representative Ringo.
Mighty Terriers. Senator, Representative Johnson is recognized.
I didn't know because I had to step out. Has my colleague concluded his query?
Yes.
I would just, on behalf of Columbia County, I'm emboldened again to offer our Humboldt County Fair facility that has provided succor, solace, respite, and comfort to you and your mighty team of athletes as you traverse scenic House District 1. And so on behalf of the county, I again offer that opportunity.
Thank you. We're not mighty. And, well, I'm not mighty, I'm not an athlete, but I go along and I try. So thank you very much. Believe me, you are a godsend, and your people are godsends, and that fair is a godsend.
Came in one morning after having driven from my district in the middle of the night, early in the morning, and driving in on the Salem Parkway. Here's the good Senator Courtney, huffing and puffing down down the Salem Parkway. It must be about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right. I don't want people to see me when I'm out there, so I do it as early in the morning as I can so no one can see me. I'm embarrassed by my body.
Are there other questions for Senator Courtney? Senator Courtney,
thank you for being so patient and taking me out of order, and I apologize to you.
Again, we're honored to have had you here. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members, the budget notes for the State Fair directed the Department of Administrative Services to be responsible for the conduct of the feasibility study and for the modernization master plan contracting. And I was wondering if time would permit that we could have the Department of Administrative Services.
The pager?
Mr. White, I believe.
Oh, okay. Facilities. Okay. All right.
Give the committee just a brief overview of the process that they went through in terms of these studies.
Okay, Mr. White.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Dave White, Administrator of the Facilities Division, Department of Administrative Services. The department's role with regard to the state fair is unique. There's a statute that says that they'll contract with us to do capital construction, and they're the only agency that has that particular statute. So we have worked together at different times over the years. I would characterize it as saying for almost 2 decades, the legislature believed that the state fair should be able to be completely self-supporting, and a series of directors informed you that they were, but they weren't. And that was most evident in the wear and tear on the facilities. They could cover operating costs, but not operating costs and facilities costs as well. So in 1998, after the audit, we were sent out to do a review of the property. And the team that did that review found about $11 million in maintenance that really must be done in order to just make the fair do what it now does. That's where the $10 million came from in lottery bonds in the 1999 session. And $2 million of that began to be used for emergency and urgent projects that needed to take place right away. We did work with the city, the county, and the state fair and others to put together the feasibility study. That feasibility study asked just about everything that anybody could ask. Should there be a state fair? Should it be here? What should it do? Can it earn its own way? Can it cover all its costs? And every other question that we could think of before we brought in a consultant. C.H. Johnson Consulting was working on the feasibility study, and that was in November of 99. By December, we had on board Bullock Smith and partners to do the master planning work. Now, master planning really takes the thing that you want to do with your state fair and puts it into place in the facilities themselves. Some earlier studies at some time in the past had projected about $30 million in work that should be done there to change, drastically altering the state fair properties. But essentially what the master plan has been doing and what the feasibility plan has been doing over the last 2 years here has been just continuing to target the maintenance in the right place. So all of the money that's being spent out there now is essentially maintenance that must be done, guided in such a way that it foresees where the state fair is going to need it most. We have, in fact, now hired as the, we went through the process, those were requirements to get the additional $8 million of a $10 million lottery bond released. And the emergency board, after hearing from Representative Winters and Senator Courtney, and the state fair did release those funds in June of 2000. We have hired We Group Architects as the design consultant in November of 2000 to go out and do the design work for this maintenance that's to be done. As that maintenance proceeds, or the way to make that maintenance proceed, it's best to bring the contractor on at this time. So we're bringing in a contractor. And the contractor has been advertised out. It's called a CMGC, a Construction Manager General Contractor. These parties work together with the architects because, in fact, when you already have the buildings there, there's more of the contractor that's needed than the architect, I think. So the contractor will be in there with the architect going through the process and through the state fair and determining where to best spend that other $8 million, all aimed at just maintenance that must be taken care of and repairs that must be taken care of. We expect to select that contractor next month, and then that work will proceed. In the meantime, I can give you just a little overview of some of the kinds that have been done, some of the kinds of work that have been done with the first $1,300,000 or so out of that $10.2 million that was in lottery bonds. The Jackman Long Building was painted and sealed, and these things were aimed. In fact, I should pause here for a moment and say work in my office is suffering because they took from me one of my best workers and made her the director out there. And Senator Yee is has reminded me very often that I have not got all the work done that I should have on the statewide facility coordination program. And that's what Katie Cannon was doing when she was taken from my arms here and put out to the state fair. But what she had to do was ask us to target some of this work toward what could be done just before the very next state fair was done. And then again, you're always targeting when can you do this work around the state fair and the other events that happen to occur out there. So we've also done, we and the state fair, the work has been split up between us reasonably. The Columbia Hall has had electrical bus work done, duct improvements done. The Show Horse Barn has been painted and had repair work, minor repair work. The stadium and the horse show barn have had electrical and HVAC repairs and improvements. There have been improvements to the show horse warm-up arena. All of the studies that came out of the legislative task force showed that these were the kinds of places we needed to point some of the work. The stadium arena wall had some reconstruction done to it. The horse stadium had water line replacements and so on. I mean, the list could go on. But these are all repairs. There's no new buildings, no new facilities out there really to speak of. telephone systems and so on. And that's the nature of the work where we're at. That's the kind of thing that's going to continue under the full contract, will be repairs and maintenance, at which point you'll have a state fair that will have back, I would say generally in its buildings, what has deteriorated out of it over the last 10 or 15 years.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. White, when the initial inquiry was done, was any question raised about whether or not demolishing current facilities and starting again made more sense than trying to rehab older and deteriorated buildings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, it wasn't the focus of that study. The study there would have identified a building and didn't identify a couple that were just not repairable, but it wasn't the focus. That was, however, the focus of the feasibility study, the master plan, and the legislative task force. And so as they decide what direction to go in, that gives you the guidance on whether or not a building should be rehabbed.
In the very opening part of your remarks, you said that part of the feasibility study made the inquiry of whether or not the fair could ever earn its own way. I am at the disadvantage that I haven't read the rather voluminous material we were given today. What's the answer to that question?
The general answer was the same as auditors had found in the preceding year, and that was that virtually none ever have. And so I think we were believing that somehow if you just did good business, you could make a profit. But we know a good business has the opportunity to say, this is unprofitable. And a good business has the opportunity to say, I may be a printer, but I think I'll sell souvenirs on the side, or I think I'll do something else too, whereas a state fair has a clear mission and has to stay within it. And in fact, if you just think about having the investment in facilities in order primarily to provide for this event and then other events that you might acquire. In fact, the consultant that we dealt with is a worldwide consultant from Asia and across America, and he said that in fact very few public facilities of that nature of any kind, fairs or others, succeed on their own. It's very rare. But state fairs, I'm not aware of any that has.
Representative Ringel is recognized.
Thank you. I'd just like to hear you articulate what is the state fair's mission?
Well, I think that it's a little bit unfair. I should first disclose that I've been in a number of the meetings going back some time and heard it. The one discussion I liked best was when I attended one of the board sessions and heard them describe the state fair that I remember as a child very early on. I went with my uncle, who was a farmer in Junction City. And when he would go, he would see the latest tractors. He would see the latest combines. He would see things that he learned at the fair. And that's how the early fairs targeted. They were a place where farmers came together and learned, in effect, how to farm, what the latest things were.
So what is today's state
fair? It changed completely so that it's now people like my children who go to the fair who never saw a farm, never been on a farm, and see instead what the farms of the world out there are doing, so that they know milk doesn't just come from the store and food doesn't just come in a package. And so I think that's a very important piece. And I would agree with the heritage theme in the sense that these are our roots. Nothing will ever be less, more fundamental than food. And by and large, we raise young people who don't know where that stuff comes from. So it is it's a connection. But again, I have to confess too, I'm one of these people who likes to go every year.
Senator Yee is recognized.
I don't know if Dave White is one who asked my question. Is there a self-sufficient business plan to pay the $10 or $11 million lottery bond, pay for operations? There's no new construction. So pay for operating and pay off the bond.
Madam Chair, I believe, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I think that there is clearly a plan to operate that business to the maximum that it can and include paying back the debt. But I would have to defer to Ms. Cannon to really describe how that plan works. I'm the facility side of the state, and that's it here.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you. The facilities question, and this may be grossly unfair. I get the impression that some of the buildings out there, that as they're being fixed, it's almost like putting a Band-Aid on a slit throat. And that you're a facilities expert. At what's the longevity of that facility? How much longer do we keep painting barns that maybe don't have structural integrity anymore, or to continue to make the level of investment in public money that the state's making? What are we buying long term?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think the best way to answer that is to say that we did ask whether the fair should just be sold and a new one purchased or something else done. And the answer is, by and large, that kind of action is not going to change, not going to make everything okay. Instead, I believe what you have to do is intensive maintenance of some of the buildings. Some of them can last for, I shouldn't say forever, but a very, very long time. The real issue is deciding which of those to do, and that's what I think is happening now that hasn't happened in a long time. You have this cooperative effort of the legislative task force, different studies that were done, and all participants moving in on it to really guide that so that you don't put a Band-Aid on the wrong building. Now, the fact is, when you're maintaining buildings, if you apply the Band-Aids timely, they'll last forever.
Other questions for Mr. White? Thank you very much, Dave. We're officially out of time. Did Ellie or Larry, did you want to make any further comments to augment those of Murray?
I think Murray did an excellent job.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the commission members being here today and taking time from your busy schedules. We appreciate it. With that, we'll go ahead and stand adjourned until tomorrow at 1 o'clock, even hour.
Mr. Chair, members, just a reminder, tomorrow we will have public testimony, so there will be folks from all around the state who are testifying.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other fund money in the government.
It's from